We will be starting the show shortly. Please turn off cell phones, pagers, and all audio devices.
I was just singing I Remember You, and it was amazing. Scott did not join in. I was very upset.
Ah, pre-show banter. That's what I look forward to.
That's the cold open. Sorry.
Wait a second. The show started?
That was the cold open.
We started.
That was the cold open. Yeah.
I feel like we're in the source code.
What?
This isn't really happening.
I'm confused.
Quantum mechanics and what's the other one?
Parabolic calculus. Well, now it makes sense.
Right now you understand.
Completely.
Yeah.
My question is, are we in the source code, or we just think we're in the source code? Are we like the people that are talking about the source code one level down in the source code, about to send somebody else that we think is going to be dead into another level of the source code?
I think by mentioning the source code, we have now created another reality. And so now we're in that. It's fascinating. You know what was fun about the source code? The train stop that they stop at in the movie every time, because right. The movie repeats. It's, you know, like a Groundhog Day kind of thing.
Sure. and it's just like Groundhog Day. It is a laugh riot with two S.
Groundhog Day, but serious. That is there was Glenbrook Station. That's where I grew up.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the suburbs of Chicago. They stop at Glenbrook Station, which didn't exist until maybe about 6 or 7 years ago.
But unless you were in the source code.
Right. And then it probably existed on multiple realities. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Welcome to Tech Bacon.
Welcome to Tech Bacon, ladies and gentlemen. I am Brian.
I am Scott.
And it is Saturday, April. One of these days I'm going to have the date ready to go.
It's April 23rd. Brian.
23rd. This is episode 8.
And it is not Earth Day, because that was yesterday.
Yeah, and it's not 420 because that was Wednesday.
Right.
But I hope everybody had a good time on 420.
Just another day. Just another day, as far as I'm concerned.
Fair enough.
Lots of
it's been a really interesting week, actually.
Yeah, lots of tech stuff going on.
Yeah, lots of up and down.
Absolutely.
One thing that broke, I want to say it was like Wednesday or...
It was earlier in the week.
Tuesday or Wednesday. But news about a location tracking file, basically, in iOS devices that had started with iPhones running and iPads and everything running 4.0 and forward.
Right.
It first came out, Gawker, there's some researchers, I think the O'Reilly, they found it, and then Gawker Media published an article that was, as to be expected, inflammatory and full of hyperbole and freaking everybody out because they're Gawker and that's what they're really, really good at. The reality of it, I guess, is basically there's a file called Consolidated DB on any iOS device that is basically stores for the perpetuity that you've had your device, basically, location information of where that device has been, generated not by GPS but by Wi-Fi towers and cell phone towers.
Yeah, and GPS signal too, I think, right?
Not GPS.
If you had GPS on?
It wasn't GPS.
Okay. And the file gets stored on your computer.
Because when you back up your phone,
right,
all that stuff gets put there. And also what's interesting about it was basically in a place that is openly accessible. It wasn't encrypted. It wasn't hidden in some sort of, you know, weird sandboxy thing where you couldn't get to it. If you knew where to look on your backup, you could find it.
Right, right. And not only there able to find, completely not encrypted.
Correct.
So just a file that anyone could grab and see all your locations that you've been for, what, since you've had...
As long as you've had the device.
Yeah.
As long as you've been running 4.0.
Pretty scary.
Yeah.
Scary and not... I guess everyone had to agree to that
The license agreement?
Yeah, the license agreement.
Well, I mean, because there's a bunch of different ways to look at the story. I mean, a lot of people go and share their location anyway, so why do you care? But that's not really valid because this is something you're not specifically – you don't know is there specifically and you don't know it's accessible on your phone.
And it's not going away. I mean, it's like it's not like you share it and then it's done. It stays there.
Right.
And there's a log of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You do – when you go and sign up with an iOS device, and I think Android devices as well. Actually, I mean, I know Android devices do it. I don't know about the license agreement, the user agreement. But basically all these devices send anonymous, you know, information to either Apple or to Google. So basically they can go and, like, you know, track usage. They can go and, you know, see what areas have poor performance, like all kinds of stuff like that.
Correct.
That's all anonymized. That's my new word.
All anonymous information.
It's all anonymized.
We're coining that phrase on Tech Bacon here.
Yeah. You guys can use it. It's okay. I won't be mad. But basically, you know, just for all kinds of things, but that basically, you know, it's not tied to like your UUID on your phone or anything. It's just like random
data. It's just random information.
And this is something different. Now, what kind of makes it interesting is that, all these phones, of course, they have to go and create some sort of local cache of, you know, where, you know, of where you've been for, you know, apps to find out, that kind
sure.
of stuff.
And it's part of the, you know, modern smartphone.
Exactly. Yeah. And the problem is, though, why is this one, you know, why is it this long-standing one that has all this history here? What's interesting is, like, this file was actually discovered, I think, last December.
Oh, really?
And written about. Yeah. So it wasn't necessarily new information, but this, you know, this newest, you know, article and this, you know, big hype was kind of made up to be a big deal.
Right. Well, I also think it was because somebody came out with a program to read it so it could show you.
And that's the cool thing. And that's, you know, you give it a visual aspect. People can go and see it and they can get freaked out. Basically,
exactly.
there's this program you can download, and we'll link it in show notes, where you load it up on your Mac. I think it's Mac only.
Yeah.
And it will go and read one of your backups, your most recent backup, and show you basically the path of everywhere your phone has been in the last, you know, like I said, however long you've had an iOS 4 device.
Right.
And it's I downloaded it to mine. It was really cool. It was kind of sad, actually, because I just went to Los Angeles to San Francisco to Los Angeles to Fresno.
And up and down Wilshire Boulevard.
It's not that specific, actually. It's more broader than that.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it. So it's just the cities, the towers. I guess that would be a little more specific depending on how far you were traveling.
Exactly. And, you know, all this stuff for me, it's like, if it's the difference between scary and then it's kind of like whatever is what the intent is. I mean, one thing in the article is they said, like, oh, it's clearly for government spying. And
come on.
It's like, really? There's no evidence for that. The information does not get tracked, given to
Apple.
That's
just major paranoia.
Yeah. And this information, this file, none of it gets actually transmitted to Apple. People have, like, you know, run through the tests, and none of that actually gets uploaded.
At the end of the day, I mean, I think something like this, I don't think it's malicious.
Well, apparently,
I really don't.
What happened was, you know, John Gruber, basically, who's obviously a blogger and a big Apple guy, and kind of if there's information that Apple wants to go and get out into the community that's, you know, not through the Wall Street Journal, they use certain bloggers. He used to be Guy Kawasaki back in the day.
Right.
But Gruber's kind of that guy now. And he said that his people within the company said it basically. That's just the normal cache file that, you know, that Android devices, you know, have as well. But for one reason or another, it wasn't overriding old data. You know, because I think the Android one, that one, I think it has like the last 2 days, and it starts overriding itself.
Yeah, there's actually an app came out because of all of this on Android that read that file and do the same thing and show you where you've been.
Yeah,
and you know, it's the same exact thing.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's
but like you said, it overrides itself, so it's not
which is how that should work.
History, which is fine. It's just like browsing history,
exactly.
Really, if you think about it that way. You know?
I mean, which that's honestly how that function should work. So whether it was like, you know, an oversight, laziness, or whatever. I'm personally not going to go and get all aggro about it and, you know, worry I'm getting tracked by, you know, by Big Brother, because I don't think that's happening. And
no, I really think it was an oversight. I don't think it was malicious, you know, and it does concern me that with all of this going on, if this were to have happened and it came out and this was an encrypted file, nobody would be writing anything about it. You know, so it's not like it was sitting on your own computer. It's not like it was out there sitting on, you know, a server for anybody to grab.
Right.
It was on your device in your hand and your computer at your desk, you know? So
Definitely.
It's not – it just seems like – I don't know. It seems like everybody jumped on board this story with this major paranoia that seems a little unwarranted.
Well, and
the truth is,
too, anytime there's an Apple story, and particularly a negative Apple story, just makes good copy. You know, it's a good thing to go and jump on and exploit.
True. It was funny when I saw that it came out. I just wanted to try it because I thought it was cool that you could see where you've been.
Right. Exactly. And I was actually, to be honest, I did it, and I was like bummed it wasn't more granular, like you were talking about.
I wanted to see when I went to the grocery store.
Yeah, I wanted it to be like moment by moment, and it's kind of like a couple days, I think. And it's kind of like, you know, it's because it's the cell phone towers and, you know, not like GPS. It's not very specific. Like, I wanted to go and, you know, be really creepy on my own stuff, because I think that'd be funny.
Right.
Kind of be able to see it, because to be a, you know, kind of be a geek and kind of like get that
exactly.
Input. Like,
I mean, if somebody could jump on board that feature and come up with a cool app that, you know, that could do something like that for your personal use.
Yeah. And that was another thing too, I guess, where it's located on the phone, like no other application can access it either.
The OS can.
Yeah. I mean, because I think it's just that cache thing. And it's just like it feeds probably recent data to it.
I mean, and obviously, I don't know. I don't think Apple has said anything about it, and knowing them, they probably won't. But I wouldn't be surprised if in a very short while there's a little iOS update that completely changes how it works.
Oh, absolutely. And the fact that they've said nothing about it to me means that they're just going to kind of go in.
Well, that's Apple. Why feed the flame? You know what I mean? Like, what's the point? it doesn't benefit them. It doesn't really benefit anybody except, you know, people writing about it.
Yeah, totally.
And people talking about it.
Exactly. But yeah, I'll go and see if I can make a movie of my history and upload it to, you know, and link it.
Oh, fun.
Know, just because that'd be neat to go
and
see.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be really cool.
You'll see how boring I've been recently, basically.
Very exciting.
I'm just glad I at least got out of L.A. because that would have been really, really sad.
Right. There's just one dot.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you just like you're just in Los Angeles all the time.
Cell tower one, cell tower two. Brian's many travels in Los Angeles.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
Yeah. I would be curious to see somebody who's like, you know, a business traveler who flies around the country to see what theirs actually looked like, because that would be pretty cool. It would be interesting.
Especially if you go abroad.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, my cousin is a pilot and I'm curious. He's all over the world.
Sure.
So I bet you that would be Brad Kaplan, if you're listening. I want you to download this app and send me the map because I think it would be fascinating. I know he listens, so.
Another Apple news, though, was really, really cool. On Thursday, I think it was, news started leaking out about Apple's, you know, Music Locker service. Amazon obviously did the one a couple weeks ago.
Right, and there's been speculation on and on and on about all these different music services.
Yeah, and basically what happened was Google, there'd been news that Google basically had been stonewalled and was making no progress, and they'd kind of they kept asking for different things, and now they might be asking for a subscription service, and there was actually talk that they were trying to negotiate with Spotify.
Yeah, it seems like they had an idea and they had a plan, and then maybe, you know, when the reins changed over at Google, that plan may have just gone out the window.
Or even Amazon. I think Amazon may have been a big factor.
Yeah,
because Google doing a music store unto themselves now, and you already have iTunes and the Amazon store as its own Android thing. Yeah, it's like, what do you do with that?
Right. So, yeah, it seems like they've completely hit a wall. They don't know what they want. They're, you know, reports coming out from the music labels are saying that they changed their negotiating strategy midstream. So,
and even what they're asking for, yeah, what they're planning.
Exactly. So what has come out of Apple, though, has been pretty cool.
Yeah, because you know, everybody knew that they were going to do a locker, and that people thought it was going to be in conjunction with their Mobile Me service. Mobile Me is what allows you to go and much like you can with, you know, Android devices, to, you know, wirelessly sync your contacts, you know, your bookmarks, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And like right now, it costs $99. I use the service. I like it, but it's kind of banky for what it is, essentially.
When there's so many other – I mean, Yahoo, Google, everybody offering –
Yeah, and they have iDisk, which is like – it's like a crap Dropbox. I guess that's what – if Dropbox decided to be terrible, that's what iDisk would be. But so the word has been like, they're going to go and make that free in some capacity, or maybe they'll make it free. And then like for the Music Locker, then you'll pay a yearly fee.
Right.
So two things happened. Number one, Apple stopped going – they pulled a bunch of promotional offers for Mobile Me that have been kind of longstanding since its inception.
And they also, like, a little earlier, they stopped – didn't they stop selling the boxes?
Exactly. You used to be able to go and buy a box, and it was just
like at the Apple store
that you kind of like put into your computer. But yeah, they stopped selling those.
So they stopped – yeah. It's like,
so they've been slowly reining it back. And then this one thing happened with the promotional offers. And then on Thursday, news came out that they were prepping their Music Locker service. It was really, really, you know, near to happen. It was basically they'd signed deals with two of the four music labels.
Right.
And then on Friday –
they
working out that they signed a deal with Warner. Now, nobody knew if that was one of the two already, but the fact that broke as separate news tells
doesn't
me,
seem like it was.
Yeah, and it tells me they can't close a deal with the fourth guy, and they're applying pressure, which is the whole point probably of the first article.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. But they're moving fast.
Yeah, and what's cool about it is they're doing what Amazon didn't. They are going and licensing with the labels, so they can basically go and have one master file on their server.
Exactly.
And they can basically license it out and let you stream it. So you won't have to go and spend 5 days, you know, uploading all your stuff to iTunes. It will work with stuff that apparently it's supposed to work with stuff not only that you bought through iTunes, but you already have on your hard drive. And I don't know if the stuff on your hard drive you'd have to upload.
I wonder. I mean,
if they have a copy already on the server and like they recognize it, why not just do the same thing?
And hopefully, like, this is what I was talking about the other week that Lala used to do, and I'm betting it's going to be the same thing
because they bought
Lala. Is Lala would search through your iTunes library for the song titles and artists, and if it was already up in the service, it instantly added it to your cloud.
Right.
So you didn't have to upload exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And since they're negotiating these deals,
it makes a lot of sense.
Makes total sense that's going to be what they're doing. And if that's the case, I'm all on board that. That sounds amazing.
Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, and there was confirmation that there is going to be a web-based service. So like that to me, it's – I still use the Amazon service daily, but I would love to go and have, you know, because there's the other thing. If Apple is going and doing master licenses and not having to store stuff locally, there's not going to be a storage limit.
That's probably true. Or there may be a storage limit for stuff that's not in the master license that you have to upload, but it's going to be way less.
Yeah, because you're going to have, you know, the four major labels, all their stuff, and that's fantastic. I have 60 gigs of music. I'm one of those people.
I wonder if they're going to charge a service fee for that, though? I'm curious.
It depends. I mean, part of me thinks, of course, you'd have to, because they're going to be going, especially if they go and make a lot of the mobile me services free, there's going to be a lot of money that they're going to just, you know, it costs money to run those services.
Right. But if they're doing it as support to buy music through iTunes,
right,
then maybe that offsets. Kind of makes sense, you know, in that realm. I mean, I'm still going to bargain shop. I'm still going to, I mean, I would love to use an iTunes service like that. It sounds great, but
totally.
It doesn't mean I'm going to buy my music from iTunes.
Well, if an album is $3.99 on one place and it's $6.99 the other place, I mean, you know, unless right. I start getting super, super crazy hardcore about like fidelity, which quite honestly I have not been for a long time.
Yeah, me neither.
By the one that's cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you were saying you thought this may launch next week.
It's very interesting. The fact that they came, it seems to be happening very, very quickly, and like all this other stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if they launch it on Tuesday. There's been no notice. There's been no, you know.
Did you see that stuff the other day about the white iPhone that was bought overseas?
Oh, at Vodafone UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they may, in conjunction, white iPhone on Tuesday. Oh, also.
Yeah. Well, so the one thing that I said that, but basically Scott and I were talking about this in IM, and I'm like, oh, they're got to go and they're going to do it on Tuesday. Like,
I thought that was interesting.
That's my bet. Then I was thinking about it last night. The one thing that makes me kind of pull back from that is that there is no event. And it seems like this is a big deal that they would want to have.
You think they may go September?
Well, they'd want to have an event for it to demo it. The demo of it's going to be awesome. That's what's going to sell it, you know?
Well, when do they typically do their music events?
Those are not till September.
That's what
I mean. But I don't think they're going to wait.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. Because I think with the Amazon thing happening, I think they want to go and do it soon.
Right.
Maybe I could see them waiting. I mean, obviously we're in April. WWDC is coming up. They could probably wait until then.
I mean, that is a lot. Like, they would miss the entire summer. I mean, it's a huge – just a
and
season. They would miss
make
a
sense
whole season.
And it would make sense to demo it as part of the iOS 5 stuff.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
So that kind of would make sense. I would love for them to go and just kind of surprise everybody and come out of nowhere. Because quite honestly, I want the service. You know, like
I want to try it, man.
Yeah, and like I said, I like the Amazon one and I use it daily. There are just things that I don't like the way they do it, the way they arrange stuff, the UI of it. It's it's whatever. It's just people's personal preference.
But, absolutely.
I do prefer the way my iTunes is organized.
Yeah, no, me too. I on day to day basis on my computer, I use iTunes too.
Yeah.
But speaking of cloud based services. since we're on that topic, this week there was a big outage at Amazon.
Yeah, and Amazon is as well as being a
e-tailer.
How 1997 of you!
Thank you very much.
They also have like a huge side business.
It's not really a side.
Yeah, it's going to be
another business.
Well, I think I saw something the other day that's basically said like it's going to be as profitable as the store. Yeah.
Wow.
Basically they go and they sell web services from, storage. Like, we use their S3 storage to go and, host our podcasts.
Lots of websites use their storage to host their sites.
Yeah. And they have like server services where you can basically run cloud-based services, on Amazon servers.
Right. They have MySQL hosted MySQL services. Yeah. I mean,
all kinds of people. I want to say, it was like Foursquare was using it.
Tons of sites. And what they always touted as an advantage was that you can put your data across multiple zones. So they would have a West Coast zone, and then they would have multiple zones in the West Coast. Then they would have the East Coast zone and multiple zones in the East Coast. So it was kind of like if one thing went down, then your stuff would still be hosted in another zone. It may be slower to your users, but it would still be there. But I guess this this outage affected a ton of zones. So all at once, this huge, huge cloud-based service went down.
Yeah. And it really affected Foursquare. It affected Hootsuite. There, I think I'm reading this article now, 70 different websites were affected in terms of their web services.
And not little websites. I mean,
no, these are things that are huge players in terms of social media and all the recent, all the current services we use and, hooks into apps and, I mean, everything.
Yeah. I mean, it just shows you that, it's like the cloud-based services are – I think they're fantastic and they're great in general, but it's not – nothing is perfect. I mean, they go down. Gmail goes down. If you were hosting your own server it could go down. They're not
infallible.
Yeah, they're not infallible. And yeah. I think that's what people are starting to realize, that the dream of the cloud is not this infallible magic solution. It's great, but it has problems just like anything else.
Well, like any system, you can't go in a I'm looking here, then the EC2 basically is the service. The Elastic Computing Cloud. I guess there's five different regions across the globe. But yeah, you look at it and you're like, you probably need more redundancy than that. And what if all of Amazon just happens to go down one day? Do you go and then have redundancy with a different company?
At a certain point, you just have to figure that it's going to go down.
Yeah.
At times it's going to go down. At times your car is going to break. At times, you know, I mean.
And just because it's not electricity your personal is computer go out, it doesn't just, mean that it is, there aren't physical components and, right. you know, and things that can just go
wrong.
It's
not magic. You know, it doesn't just magically go through the air and always work. Although some people think it is.
I would like it better if it was magic.
Wouldn't that be cool?
I wish there were wizards making my software.
That would be amazing. The wizard computer.
People with that. Long beards.
Can we get that? Can we figure out how to do that?
I think we just grow beards and become wizards. There's a couple of books I've seen about wizardry. I'll send them over to you.
All right, this conversation is just turning strange.
You don't want to be a wizard?
Well, I didn't say that.
Don't hate.
So that's on the cloud front. That's what's been going on.
Another cool thing that Amazon did though was their the Kindle library lending.
Yeah, very very cool. For people who don't know about this, a bunch of libraries around the country have had the option for a little while to lend books through e-readers. Mm-hmm. So the Barnes & Noble, the Nook had this capability. The Sony e-reader had this capability. Basically, you would log into the library, you would have an account, and you would check out the book, just like going to the library and checking out the book, and then you would have to return it, mm-hmm. and then you wouldn't own it. So the Kindle never had that option. And then just announced this week that they're going to enable it. It's not enabled yet, but you're going to be able to have that option. And all these libraries around the country are going to, are already on board. And I think it's great. I think it changes the Kindle experience in a really positive way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's cool because you're going to be able to not only like if you for all intents and purposes, you're renting a book, you're right. just not paying for it. But if you take a book from the library and let's say you make notations on it, this is what the Kindle thing you're going to be able to do, and you decide you want to buy the book, you can buy it right from within the Kindle and you retain all your notations and everything like that you used before.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So they're not only, you know, it's not only just sitting there as, you're taking the book and you give it back, but you can actually buy it if you want, and you can actually, manipulate what you're working with.
Yeah, and it's nice to go in terms of, obviously it makes complete sense for Amazon because it allows, the Kindle to become that much more of a de facto reading platform.
Oh, yeah.
But also it is nice to, if you're on vacation, I guess you can like stock up, I would assume, on stuff and then kind of go on vacation. Right. You don't have to worry about like spending $10.
And listen, it's different kind. I mean, there's always people who like to use the library and always people who like to buy. So, it opens it up to that, that different thing, I feel.
Yeah, not to be a Luddite, the one thing that gives me pause is that I still prefer – I have a Kindle. I use a Kindle. I love my Kindle. I still prefer physical books.
Really?
In
general?
Yeah. There's something.
But like for fluff, like do you need to buy
– well, it's not necessarily just for fluff. My concern is like if this goes and takes off, then what happens? Cut funding to libraries. Yeah, because you don't – it costs money to buy those – have those books and to store them in a physical place and all that kind of stuff. They can all be digital. That's a lot easier.
Maybe libraries will start lending Kindles.
But I don't like that. I still like, getting an old book. Your library, to me, it's like it's very much of a
thing. It's
a different experience.
Not everything is on the Kindle. And not everything's going to be. Like, I'm pretty sure most of the books that are on there are pop books.
Right, or books that are already for sale on there.
Current books that – yeah. I mean, like, when you go to a library, there's a huge amount of books that you can't get on your electronic devices.
Sure.
And that's going to always be the case.
Well that's
maybe not always.
That's my thing. Yeah, it's not always. I mean, you can't stand in the way of progress and that kind of thing. But there is something that to me it's very, very different and very, very – it's a calming experience much more than a Kindle is. We're just sitting down with an actual book.
I can't remember the last time I was in a library.
I'm not a library person, but I am like a real book person.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't foresee real books going away, but – it's definitely diminishing.
See, I do. That's my thing.
Completely?
Yeah, eventually.
Like all new books, you're saying?
At a certain point.
Books aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, but at a certain point, at a certain point, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Not only because, it's inexpensive, but also because, a lot of authors are, moving away from the publishing industry, publishing on their own.
True.
That kind of thing.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
So.
Well, we'll see how Kindle ruins the
No, they're not ruining
library.
It. It's just progress. Like I said, I feel like
just
a little bit of a Luddite.
Changing.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
Just changing, which is, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, there's definite, there's huge, huge benefits to it. But I like to go and sit down with my Victrola and a candle and read a book by candlelight.
Curl up
yeah.
with your cat.
And not a cat. No, no,
no, no. Dog?
Bearskin rug.
Bearskin.
Yeah.
Okay, this visual is getting way too strange for me. On to the next topic.
Well, one thing that we've been talking about research in motion and the Blackberries and the playbook a lot recently, and we can't really say anything nice. And there was new news this weekend, but we've kind of decided we're not going to go and talk smack about BlackBerry anymore, just because it's going to get boring.
Right. We're not going to talk about anything bad that's happening with BlackBerry. We're not going to discuss how on AT&T you can't tether your BlackBerry to your playbook. We're not going to talk about that.
So like the fact that if you're an AT&T BlackBerry user, you can't access email on it ever. Like we're not going to talk about
that. No, we don't want to talk about that.
That just makes people feel bad. That's not a good thing.
We're putting a little bit of a, you know, we're just
moratorium.
A little moratorium.
Yeah.
Just a
what was that other thing we couldn't talk about? There's one other.
Oh, there were so many other things. There are so many other things that we're just not going to talk. We're not going to talk about it. Although there, by us not talking about it, eventually at some point, we're just going to have an old episode of discussing BlackBerry's horrible strategy.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about it. We're not. We're moving on. Brian, we're moving on. Don't look it up.
I'm sorry. There was one other piece of news that I didn't want to talk about that I'm looking for.
Come on. We can leave them alone for like a day. Maybe.
I don't know.
No? Let's leave them alone. We'll leave them alone.
If you say so.
We're going to move on. This week, T-Mobile announced a really interesting new service that I'm not exactly sure how it's going to evolve, but it's called Bobsled. And you haven't seen it, right, Brian?
I have not.
So bobsled.
But I love to go bobsledding.
Well, who doesn't? I mean, it's fun and dangerous.
What?
It's dangerous and fun. So bobsled, it's a voice over IP service that T-Mobile's launching, not just through T-Mobile phones or anything. It's going to be a web service. And their first implementation is through Facebook. Mm-hmm. So you install the bobsled Facebook app, and it turns your Facebook chat into voice over IP. So you can do audio chatting with your friends through Facebook, full VOP quality, wherever they are in the world,
right.
just like Skype or just like Google Chat.
Does it hook into a phone thing or is it just through your computer's hardware?
Just through your computer right now.
Okay.
From what I read, they're going to come out with an app for your phone, and it doesn't have to be T-Mobile.
Right.
Like, this is just going to be any – to compete with Vonage or whatever that they're doing. I tried it out on Facebook. Installation was simple, easy, and if I go to call somebody on it, they don't have to have it. It'll start the call, and they can just accept it, and then they can be in the call with me. Then they can install it after the fact if they want.
But it can record them even if they don't have the software on their side?
It's not recording. It's just, you know, you're talking back and forth, real time.
But I'm saying, like, how can it?
No, well, they have to accept it. They have to accept, like, when you send them a request, say a call request, they have to accept it. And then it's like a temporary app, basically.
Gotcha.
Until they install it. And also, aside from doing the voice chatting or just phone call, basically, you can leave voice messages for people.
That's
through
cool.
their Facebook, and it'll say on their wall, so-and-so left you a voice message.
That's
and then
very
you can
cool.
play it. Which, I mean, I don't think you play it on the wall.
Wait, does it put it on your public wall that somebody left a message for you?
You know, I'm not sure.
I mean,
sure.
I guess it'd have to be
I didn't try it, but –
because that is creepy to me.
Yeah, I know.
That is very creepy to me. I do not like that. I do not want records on my Facebook wall of people leaving messages for me.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
Not that there's anything I'm embarrassed about in my life that I don't want on my Facebook wall, because that is just an open book. Everything's on there, ladies
completely
and gentlemen.
Open.
Yes.
Completely open to the world at large.
Well, actually, no. I have it locked out so nobody can see it.
Right.
But the Tech Bacon page is open. Facebook.com/TechBacon.
This is true.
Yes,
this
indeed.
Is true. Leave us a message.
Please do. Please call us. Can you call brand pages? Probably just individuals.
I don't know. We'll have to try it. If anybody out there is curious in trying it, please feel free to leave us a message if you can.
Or Scott Gold, if you can find him. Are you open to the public?
No.
Facebook? Friend Scott Gold on Facebook and then call him and leave messages.
Hey, man, come on.
What?
It's not nice.
People know my name, too.
I guess that's true. I suppose. What else we got on tap?
You wanted to talk about how much you hate Outlook.
Oh.
Which is exciting for me because I've hated Outlook for years.
Well, you're not going to like this, though.
That's okay.
So, recently, Microsoft came out with Office 2011 for the Mac. Huge revision. They got rid of Entourage, which is the email program, and they included now Outlook for Mac.
And they added the ribbon, which sucks.
They added a version of the ribbon.
It's terrible. The ribbon sucks. You know what? The first thing I did when the great thing about the ribbon, and I mean, you can do this on the other on the Windows version as well, is that you open up preferences and there's a box we can turn it off and never have to use it. Best part of the ribbon. I love that.
I have to say that after use for some time on Windows, I've gotten very used to the ribbon and it becomes very functional. It's just a different way of working. That's all there is to it.
I've been using a program for 10, 12 years. Don't make me relearn how to use the entire frickin' program. That's just a personal opinion.
I mean, you know, it doesn't bother me. I like playing around with new features. However, the general user freaks out.
Well, here's the problem. Because like, if you know Excel or if you know Word well, there are so many specific features. Because first of all, the app is laid out like trash anyway, in my opinion. It's functional. Everybody uses it. That's great. Everybody has to use it.
Outlook?
Word.
Oh,
Word. I'm doing Word and Excel. Word. But like, it's so Byzantine the way the thing is laid out. So like, you have to go and like learn where certain things are by memory, not because they're intuitive, but you have to literally learn by memory.
They really never have been intuitive programs.
No, they're kind of awful. I mean, to be honest. They're functional, but then everybody uses them, but they're kind of terrible in that regard.
Right.
And so like you spend all this time kind of learning where like these random things are because they're not in any place you would look. And then to have to go and have that all thrown away and have to relearn it all over again because of the ribbon. Like, no, not okay.
Okay. So on that note,
sorry, that was my ribbon.
That's
rant.
Okay. I Outlook for Windows. I love. And the newest version that came out last year, 2010, they had some killer features. The way they do threaded emails in Outlook is brilliant. I like it way better than Gmail and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice feature. It's just, I don't know. And I think to be honest, I think it has to do with the fact that they beta tested it for like 6 months public.
Right.
Like they did recently. Microsoft has been really good about that. In the past couple of years, they do these long extended betas and track bugs and information. And by the time it goes live, these things are really solid.
Cool.
Typically. On the Mac side, for some reason, whatever their Mac team, I just don't understand. First of all, no beta. They didn't do a beta at all, which didn't make sense to me. So they launch Office 2011, and Outlook was just missing features. You couldn't resend a message. There was no resend. Like, shocking. Shocking. Mm-hmm. How could there be no resend? You can't create a folder in your email list unless it's a subfolder.
What do you mean a subfolder? There's no subfolder of your inbox, or
you can only do a subfolder of an existing folder, and then you can move it out into the main area. So, like, you know, if you're creating, you know, you have your list of folders, you go like on Windows, you go File, New Folder, or New Subfolder.
Right.
There's no new folder. There's no new subfolder. So you have to be on a folder to create another folder.
How do you create folders on it? I haven't played around with it. I have it on my computer.
It's the same thing. File, new folder. But what happens is it only can create it within another folder. And then you have to drag it out in order to have it be in your main folder list. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. It's baffling. And, no spell check on send, which is a feature that almost every email program has.
Where it goes and automatically spell checks it when you hit the send button?
Yeah, and the only way to spell check is, which you'll like, this is through the ribbon. You have to go to a part of the ribbon and then hit spell check on your message in order to send.
You see, nothing you're telling me here is that curious, because I think all their stuff is terrible.
Except it's not like this on the PC at all. Well, all these features that I'm saying are all in Outlook. No. And I've always been.
No question on this folder thing.
And they were in Entourage. They were in Entourage.
Quick question on the folder thing. I'm curious, just because I want to know how this works out, how it's terrible. Are you trying to create folders within your inbox or just within the main?
No, just in the main thing. You can't.
So like over here, you mean? Like this kind of stuff?
Yep.
So I just loaded up Outlook, so I just wanted to see. I got Outlook and I've never opened it once.
Yeah, no, you can't. You have to drag it out in order for it to be in the main list. You can't just go find. You can't do it. I've gone over it with clients who called me complaining. This has been such a big problem. This and the spell check are huge problems. I just don't understand why. And they came out with a big service pack that fixed the resend. You can resend now, which you couldn't do. It's just infuriating and baffling. To be honest, it's baffling because it makes me feel like nobody actually used it.
Well, this
impractical.
I'm going to go and try to sum it up in my personal experience. And when it comes to the Microsoft business unit for Macintosh, they're terrible.
I'll go with you there.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll go with there. And, oh, and another thing, it's been building, and like,
yeah, you're seething, you're very seething,
right? So another thing, when you on Outlook for the PC with the thread, it has threaded emails, mm-hmm. which is a very cool feature. So the way it works is in your inbox, all your emails show up, and if there's threads of those emails, there's a little drop down arrow next to the message. Mm-hmm. So if you click on a message in your email, a new message that comes in, it'll show you the most current message in the preview pane. And then if you drop down the arrow, you'll see the rest of the messages, right?
Right.
Okay. On the Mac version, if you click on the most recent of an email, it looks the same in the inbox. It doesn't show you the current email in the preview pane. It shows you a list of all the subjects in the thread. And you have to actually drop down the arrow to get to the new message that just came in.
And you can't go inside a preference to have it go in most recent?
You can. The only preference you can change is that it opens the whole thread when you click on it.
Makes no sense to me.
And if people don't know what I'm talking about, if you use it, you'll see.
And if you don't seek it out because it will make you angry.
Yes, it makes me angry. So there's my rant on...
It's nice to see you a little angry about, you know, about Microsoft Office Suite. I like it.
Well, Microsoft Office Suite for Mac.
No, just in general. See, I spend every day struggling in a daily epic struggle.
Sisyphus. Do you have Outlook?
Is it Sisyphian? Is that the right term?
I have no idea what word you're saying.
Like Sisyphus with the rock.
Yes, but I don't know.
So I'm gonna decide it's Sisyphian. And if it's not, I'll edit this out later.
Fair enough.
Struggle with their entire Office Suite.
Do you have Outlook 2010?
No, we have Outlook 2000 something.
Two?
No, I want to like six, 4, 6, 8, some random number.
Because I just, in my opinion, the 2010 Outlook, they got everything right. It's the first time that I got a brand new Outlook.
Right.
And I was like, wow, they actually tweaked the right things. They did, like, they didn't, it wasn't drastic changes. It was all optimized. I really was happy with it. And I was so excited for the Mac one to come out because I thought they were going to be doing the same stuff.
I was shocked they actually put Outlook on it because they always seem to go and like offer enough stuff to let people go and get by but still ghettoize the Mac version, you know, which right. So it doesn't surprise me that they're doing
well,
that.
Well, they're trying like to that. Just make it all, you know, so it's all cross-compatible, yeah. You know,
The last theory. Version, the last version before 11, they actually took out the Visual Basic Editor. So if people had macros in their, you know, on their Windows stuff, you couldn't open on the Mac side. They've always been – it's like that,
yeah,
for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I agree. So
I agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Enough.
Do we have to make it explicit because I just said dicks?
Yes. No.
Okay.
I don't think so. If you had said, never mind. I'll keep it clean. I'm going to keep it clean, Brian.
For once.
should we move into
food?
Some food?
Let's do some food.
Some food. Okay. So I'm going to go two food things. This week. So first of all, this week is Passover in the Jewish tradition. And Passover, there's a lot of food things going on with Passover. I myself, for the past few years, have made a fish dish for Passover. And it's called gefilte fish, for anybody that doesn't know. It's more of an Russian Eastern European dish, and it's not, there's nothing, no religious significance to mm-hmm. it except that there's no bread in it, so it is eaten on Passover a lot. A couple of years ago, my aunt was asking to go buy fish, and previous years my grandparents lived here and my grandmother would make the gefilte fish, and you know, so we had somebody that made the gefilte fish. This year, not this year, like 3 years ago now, mm-hmm. My brother and I decided to actually take the recipe and make it ourselves. It's a process. It's a process, and it's disgusting, and some people hate gefilte fish.
No, why is it – I've had it before, and I actually really, really liked it. I was a Passover with a dinner with a friend of mine years ago, my friend Jen. Uh-huh. And they were like, oh, gosh, it's so terrible. I thought it was really, really good.
I like it.
And everybody else, like, you know, I'm not Jewish. Everybody that was Jewish at the table was like, oh, we hate this. I was into it. I thought it was good.
I love gefilte fish. So what it is when you – basically, it's ground up fish, and you use like – two or three different kinds, ground up with egg and salt and then boiled. it's really
– that sounds foul.
It sounds very unappealing. Back – you know, when my grandma used to make it, she would get the fish and then she would grind it herself. And you would grind it up and she would grind it with onions and season it and stuff like that. Nowadays, I go to the Santa Monica Seafood I order it pre-ground. and you get, I know, I get three different kinds of fish. It comes pre-ground. I also have to request the bones and the head of the fish. And I'll tell you why. I'll go a little bit through the process of what it takes to make the fish. So you get this box of stuff. I have a huge pot. Now, I found a secret. I accidentally stumbled on a secret to this. I bought this huge, like, 32-quart tamale steamer as the pot. And so a tamale steamer has a bottom plate. And then there's, like, you know, a few inches below the plate that – usually you put the water in and it steams the tamales. So what you have to do for the fish is you have to create a fish stock first. So you take the heads and the bones, you put it in a big pot with water and salt and season it and let it boil to create this fish stock. So what I do is I do it in that pot. Then I take the grate for the tamale steamer and push down all the fish guts and everything like that.
Oh, so it doesn't mix in with the...
So it doesn't mix in with the fish when it's cooking. So it makes it more flavorful because you get to keep it in there while it's cooking as opposed to having to take it out when you put the fish in.
And who doesn't love fish head flavor?
I mean, come on.
Obviously.
That's one thing I can't do, though, that you get the fish and you have to take the eyes out of the head, and I can't do it. It totally grosses me out.
Wait, you cook it with the fish eyes?
No, you have to take the fish eyes out.
So you said you can't take them out. What do you get them?
Well, I have somebody else do it. When my brother was here, I had my brother do it, and then I had my friend Connie did it this year.
You're cheating.
I'm horrible.
Next year,
because if you leave them in, the eyeballs will explode.
Okay, everybody, should Tech Bacon be around next year, which we hope it will be,
yeah.
Mark this. I'm going to go and force Scott to take the eyes out himself.
Oh, man.
It is time.
I don't know if I can
You
do
have
it.
Become a man.
I don't know if
it
I
is
can
time
do
for,
it.
Yes, it's time.
I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can do it. It grossed me out just thinking about it.
But you know what?
Like, it makes me squirm.
Do one thing every day that scares you. And next year, this time, it's going to be taking out fish eyes.
Yeah. So once the eyes are out, you make the stock, then you take these ground fish, you mix it together, you mix in some eggs, and it just becomes this really gross looking pasty fish mush. But
you're selling it. You're selling
it. But then, so then what you do is you once the pot has boiled and you have this awesome fish stock, because the stock ends up tasting really, really good. It's something you could use for like a great bouillabaisse at some point. I mean, it's just so good. Then you take and you make these little balls of fish with your hands, and then you put it in and you boil for about an hour and a half. And it comes out of this like fluffy, delicious, like really good tasting gefilte fish. And so this year, that's what I was doing this week. I actually made the fish, you know.
Yeah.
I,
what does gefilte mean?
I have no idea. That's actually a really good question.
Because it seems like it's, you know, it's a...
it probably just means
a
describer
of some sort, yeah.
You know, it's probably Yiddish is my guess.
Let's find out.
You want to look it up?
I'm going to look it up right now.
Well, I'm going to – well, Brian,
how do you spell it?
That's also another good question. It's like G-I-F-I-L-T-E, something like that. I'm not exactly sure. But I'll post
Google
some pictures.
Save me.
I took some pictures of the fish boiling, and it was pretty funny when I went to go
– from the Yiddish and German, stuffed fish.
Stuffed fish. Very interesting.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Thank you, the internet. We love you.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. So anyway, that was my food making. I didn't just eat food this week. I actually like was preparing a big – I mean I made like 25 or 26 gefilte fish. It's a big process. It takes a long time.
Yeah. Well, remember you telling me a story about how previous year you and your brother had done it and how it just made your apartment stink for six months.
Oh my God. When I did it in my apartment, I mean the smell – and I actually think it's a really good smell because it's not, it smells like fish stew. You know, it doesn't smell like – rotting fish or anything like that. But it permeated my entire apartment complex and outside. So like if you walked up to the apartment building, you smelled this really strong fish smell.
It's so not okay.
I felt kind of bad for my neighbors, but not really. This year I actually made it at my aunt and uncle's house. So it was
I would like to try it one of these years.
Well, next year I will bring you some gefilte. I should have brought some for – you know, I didn't even think about
it.
Yeah,
continuing theme, Scott forgetting to bring food to the show for brunch. That's awesome. I myself for Passover this year I'm going to be listening to Metallica's Creeping Death.
I like it.
And that's that will be my contribution.
Okay, on a better food note – that was cool. But on an eating food note,
yes.
A couple weeks ago, and I had already posted this on Food Spotting, but I never really talked about it. I didn't talk about Old Place, did I?
Mm-mm.
Sure. Yeah. So I eat at so many places, I can't remember. There's a restaurant.
Need an intervention, really.
There's a restaurant out in Agoura, which is north of Los Angeles. called Old Place. And it is a small little, almost like log cabin restaurant, just kind of in the mountains outside of Los Angeles. And it's been around forever, for many, many, many years. And I went there for I'd never heard of it. And I went there for brunch with my aunt and uncle and my dad and my cousin. And let me tell you, this place has an amazing brunch. I mean, they serve their coffee in old tin coffee cups, you know, like you use for camping. And it's like these long wooden tables. And what's cool is when you go there, there's a board on the wall that has your name and your reservation time. Mm-hmm. And when you walk up, if somebody else has that table reserved after you, it has their name and their reservation time. So you have to be done by the time they get there, because it's already listed on the board and they can, you know, basically come and take your table. But the food was amazing. They had these awesome frittatas. They had these blueberry pancakes that were probably the best blueberry pancakes I've ever had. Wow. I mean, just complete griddle cake. So, like, they were a little crunchy on the outside and fresh blueberries on the inside. I think there may have been some cornmeal in the pancakes, but really what a true pancake should be, you know, made in a pan. And just a little buttery, just delicious. So if anybody has any interest in going there, they have this amazing brunch. Also, I guess at night, which I haven't been to, it's a steakhouse.
Oh, wow.
And like, you come and you order, I want the steak. Like, there's no option of, like, you know, 10 different things. There's like steak and a couple of specials and that's it. And it's supposed to be just this incredible, you know, steak restaurant. But cool. We went there for brunch. So that's those are my food adventures for the week.
Very, very nice. Do you have anything upcoming that's going to be exciting?
I do actually. In a couple weeks, KCRW is doing a street food little festival, like discussion. And then they're going to have... they're going to have a discussion about street food around the world, and then they're also going to have food from, you know, different street, street vendors. I don't know exactly how they're going to set it up.
Is this the thing, like, weekend, this next weekend?
It's May 1st, yeah, I believe.
Where I can't make it.
I know.
But that sucks.
It's okay. I will take pictures and I will talk about it, hopefully.
And you will not bring food back.
And I will not bring food back. I have to remember to not bring food back for Brian. It makes it more fun.
Exactly. Oh, you know, one thing we need to cover, our listener Connor, our friend from Thousand Stories, wrote in some questions about, was talking about one of the shows a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yes.
What remember?
I remember him writing that in, but I can't remember exactly what his question was.
It was basically about Apple, and in terms of, we talked about or you actually mentioned in terms of the iPad, how it felt like they were, you know, able to make apps now for a known quantity.
Oh, right.
In terms of, like, before they kind of didn't know how people were going to go and use it. Yeah.
What was the exact, do you remember?
He was wondering if, like, he thought people had been
I can pull it up.
There's a tractor outside.
He was asking, just, you know, think they've been developing for the iPhone and if they're going to start developing for the iPad. I mean, I kind of agree with him as far as he said he had, you know, like, a barrier in getting an iPad.
And he thought if they were basically developing primarily for the iPhone in all cases. And
I think there are
a few tweaks for, like, the bigger screens and stuff.
I mean, really what I think is, I think now, as opposed to finding the way, now it can be more fun and loose in their development because they know what it can do now.
Right. Well, I'd take a slightly different approach than the answer. I think third-party developers, I think, have been trying to go and find a way. I think from the very first iPad apps that came out, Apple was very aware that it was a different interface, and they changed there are a lot of given UI paradigms with, you know, on an iPhone in terms of, you know, it's a single screen, you have a back button in the upper left, things like that. But everything's kind of based around this one view, where the iPad from the very beginning, and this is from the Mail app to the Calendar app, they basically did a lot of things differently to kind of go in and show the way for developers in terms of having instead of everything being like one window for a selection, you could be having a window that was like a view of your data, and then there could be a popover.
Sure.
So like from the Mail app, if you're looking at it in portrait mode, it would be like the whole screen would be a message. And in the upper left, there'd be a button that would show your inbox.
Right.
And so I think they did a lot of work in that way to kind of go and, you know, try to go and, you know, utilize the different screen form factor, you know.
I think they've been trying, but I think now you can see how more people use it. So definitely, just by the fact that it's been out for a little longer, it's freeing things up.
Absolutely. Well, I think you've really seen that, like, in third-party sex. I think the third-party that came out was – was either like hewing directly to what Apple had done with their apps, or it was kind of like, you know, forgetting everything and just kind of going for a big iPhone version of
it. I mean, as opposed to trying to take an existing kind of application from a computer and make it on the iPad and iPhone, I think now we're seeing what you're talking about. Now we're seeing developing, you know, for that user interaction.
Yeah. And I think what's really been the big change too is like, I think at first they were – they didn't want to go and step on any toes. And I think they didn't know, A, like you were talking about, how people were going to use it.
Yeah.
And also, B, I think Apple released the device perhaps not knowing exactly how people would use it.
Right.
You know, so they had to go and give the base functionality and make that really, really polished. They couldn't really stretch their legs in terms of things like GarageBand or the new iMovie and that kind of thing. And now that that's happened, and they can start now going they sold it, you know, as this thing that can do all these great things with applications and it's, you know, content consumption. Now that it's established – you know, and frankly, it looks like the next year is going to continue to be established because, you know, both, you know, Zoom sales and Playbook sales, unless Amazon comes up with something interesting, which we should talk about next week. It looks like it's going to be the de facto tablet for the next year, at least as well. They can start stretching their legs and start, you know, doing more things because now it's kind of established as this thing. Now they can say, like, it's not only this great thing you've been using for a year, it's the thing you can go and create with.
And it doesn't seem like it's – yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going away.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing.
You know, before I feel like they struck strictly to, like, the, you know, the exact five uses that they knew people would use it for, you know, email, web browsing, you know, all that stuff.
Right. I agree.
So it's kind of neat. I'm excited because now it's like when all the really cool stuff starts happening.
Right.
So thanks for listening, Connor.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And the new 1,000 stories was awesome, by the way, this last week. So I dug it.
I haven't listened.
You good? The new one's really good.
Nice. I only listened to Brian's.
Yeah. Brian's still not listening to Brian's, but
he was good. People, listen. All right.
Cool. Is that it?
I think that's it.
Are we good? All right, man. Thanks everybody for listening. And we've had some fun. And
thank you very much.
We're going to be doing the live broadcasting thing regularly. So Saturdays at 11 is our normal time. If you
11 a.m. Pacific time.
Correct. So if you want to join us, we'll be there. And this regular podcast will be up, you know, later today or tomorrow.
All right. I'm Scott.
I'm Brian.
Thank you.